the wrinkles in your face. I'm all the things that you despise. I'm happiness and pain. I'm the voice inside your heart, looking for some truth. I'm the demons in your mind, dancing in your shoes. I'm the sound of sweet persuasion, a voice that will never lie. I was there when you were born, and I'll be there when you die. I am the life, I am the truth, I am the blues, I am the blues. I was there when your heart got broken. I'm the face without a name. I'll be around when you're feeling down. My sound can ease your pain. I'm the sullen voice inside your soul, like a secret letter. Call me when you're hurting bad. I'll try to make it better. I know many of times of hardship, of misery and despair.
Seems like just yesterday, you were a part of me. I used to stand so tall, I used to be so strong. Your arms around me tight, everything it felt so right. Unbreakable, like nothing could go wrong. Now I can't breathe, no I can't sleep.
And hello, all you wonderful people. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. And I'm back. I'm Luke, and you're listening to my show, Elephant Loaf, where I interview a different guest every episode. I can't really say every week anymore. But this week, I've got my friend Neil on. Neil, introduce yourself however you would like to.
Hi, everybody. My name is Neil, and I'm a senior here at Tufts University, and I know Luke because we are in a bucket drumming group here on campus together.
Yep. I mean, that's the best way to describe it, I think. Street percussion is in my opinion, worse. Because street percussion for me is any percussion that happens in the street, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I guess we could describe it a little bit more than bucket drumming because we play on a bunch of different things. I guess you could call it trash drumming.
Yeah, that's very true. We lost a bottle on Wednesday.
We did. We normally play with a...
With like a bottle.
With a glass bottle. And normally it's completely fine because the floor in our practice room is bouncy, so we can just drop it and nothing happens. But yeah, last week we weren't so lucky.
We hate to see it. But we were talking a little bit right before we came on air about music taste and liking throwbacks. And one of the questions you have on here is, what are your guilty pleasure listens? And so I've got to ask, are throwbacks like your main genre? Are they guilty pleasure? What's the balance there?
So I like to call throwbacks my guilty pleasure so I don't have to tell everyone it's my main genre. But yeah, I'm a big throwback guy. I have most songs I listen to. I just like to vibe. Like, you know, the early 2000s throwbacks?
Yep.
Like Maroon 5, like Bruno Mars. Just like, I just go so hard to that stuff. It's pretty hype.
It is a crime that when we are young, a lot of great like hype songs came out, and we were, or at least I was in like the fifth grade gym, you know, trying to bump to like Tayo Cruz's Dynamite. But like,
it's a good one. No, like the radio just went so hard when we were young, and like now the radio is, no disrespect to this show.
I mean, we're on this show.
This is a great radio
show.
Well,
thank you.
But you know, just like when you're in the car and you just toss on like 107.9 or whatever, just like the new music today on the radio is just like so much worse in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a very valid take. You're from around here, right?
I am. Yeah, Linfield, Massachusetts. Shout out.
Is that an actual station you listen to? Do you have favorite stations in the area? Would you be down to swap stations?
I mean, like, yeah, the ones that I usually listen to are the one I just mentioned, 107.9 and then, like, 103.3, which is, like, same type vibes.
Okay, for sure.
But, yeah, I mean, those are just, like the popular, like, music of the time, I would say. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you listen to?
104.1 and 104.5 are both in that same genre of just like new music.
Yeah.
And also morning talk shows and celebrity gossip and things like that.
Okay.
And then I like 92.5 is the river, and they're the like more indie folky stuff that I quite enjoy.
Okay. Yeah. I'll have to put those on the list.
Yeah. I mean, they're great songs. Do you have any actual guilty pleasure listens?
It was really just the genre for me.
Yeah.
Like, you throw a throwback on, I will be having a great time. And definitely a guilty pleasure for me.
For sure. Awesome. Well, let's jump to another question on here. Are you a Carm person or a DeWick person? Did you see the pizza thing yesterday?
No, what was the pizza thing?
They apparently threw it to students to come up with toppings for, like, pizzas. Point is, like, three or four student submitted pizzas were at both Carm and DeWick yesterday. And I didn't go to either of them, unfortunately, but there was one pizza just called You Can't Hate It, and like, if you looked at the menu, it would be like regular pizza names and then just You Can't Hate It.
Was it hateable? What was on it?
It was like ham and chicken, and like it looked pretty good. It looked a little meat heavy, but pretty good.
I feel like that's hateable, though. I feel like that name is a little bit misleading.
Yeah. What for you, what would be a pizza that you can't hate?
I mean, you just gotta go with like the classic cheese pizza. I think that's the only pizza you can say you can't hate. Because if you put anything like, someone's going to hate it. Someone's definitely going to hate it.
Someone's going to try at the very least.
Like me right now, I'm hating.
Very true.
I guess kind of brings us to the Carm or Do It question.
Yeah, because absolutely.
I'm a big hater of Carm.
You're a big hate? Okay.
Uh-huh. I hate Carm. So when I was a freshman, I just developed this irrational hatred of Carm, and I've carried it with me for the past 4 years. And I can't really describe it, but... Yeah, I can't go there. DeWick for life, for sure.
On campus, where have you lived?
Metcalf.
Metcalf.
Right,
smack dab center of everything.
Very close to Duwick. 2 minute walk from Duwick. So
for you, is Metcalf like the best, like dorm or like location on campus?
Certainly location. Yeah. Definitely the best location. Dorm, you get into a lot of other questions, but location wise, it's unbeatable.
It's right there.
Yeah.
And so Duwick was just the instant choice for you.
And I think like Carm, I also developed bad feelings towards because they had all these like dietary restrictions, and I was someone who like just ate whatever, and like I didn't want to like be restricted by like I don't know the vegan stuff or whatever's there. So no, which is actually interesting because I'm on like a really restrictive diet right now.
That's a good point. We can talk about that a little bit if you'd like to.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah. So what has that program looked like? How are you feeling right now? Yeah. How's it going?
Yeah. So basically, the program is it's sort of a paleo type diet where you try to eat the way that, you know, people did hundreds of thousands, millions of years ago, where it was like very high protein, very high in vegetables and fruits, depending on the season. And so you cut out things like simple grains like rice and bread and things of those nature. And you cut out all refined sugars. And yeah, it's been really, really good because I feel way more energetic now just like eating like more vegetables, more fruits. Like I don't even need to eat meats to feel satiated for the whole day, which is really interesting.
Oh, and full. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I just eat a bunch of vegetables and fruits and like I feel good. And you know how you get like lethargic after a meal and you like sort of feel.
Totally.
I don't get that at all. Right. You just, because
there you go.
You just like eat and you can eat so much and it's actually super calorically low because like vegetables and fruits are super filling because so are
they've got a lot
proteins.
Of water in them and it's just like space.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I'd highly recommend trying it. Next week, actually, we're cutting out fruits because it's supposed to it's supposed to simulate what it's like to go through seasonally.
Gotcha.
What people's diets were, and you know, fruits are
in
very
the winter,
seasonal. Yeah. You don't have access to them, and so your body's actually developed not to be processing fruits all the time, processing sugars all the time, so it kind of gives your pancreas a break. And it's sort of like what keto develops out of, right? Like people cut all the carbs and all that stuff. It's so your body can sort of shift gears into using fats instead of carbohydrates or sugars as you know, a fuel source. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And so at that point it'll just kind of be meats and vegetables and that'll be it
pretty much.
And like nuts and spices, I guess.
Get your nuts and spices there. Nuts are actually super useful because like a lot of replacements for different types of foods are based on nuts. Like for example, like almond milk or like almond flour, right? Like a lot of things are made from, you can actually get like a lot of the same types of foods by just using specific replacements.
Yeah. So I guess on that note, is there anything that you either like a lot more now that it's one of your last options left or have found that you really like?
I mean, definitely just vegetables more. I found that like you can make a lot of good foods by just like putting meat and vegetables together. Just like a spinach and like tuna, like just get tuna out of a can, put that in a bunch of spinach and like put olive oil on it and it's like a good meal. You know what I mean? So you can like do these really simple things, like put salt on it too, of course, and stuff, like make it a little bit seasoned, but like you can make pretty good meals just like throwing vegetables and proteins together, which is pretty cool.
Awesome. I've been a big sauteed spinach person recently, mainly because I bought a lot of spinach and then I needed something to do with it. But
for
like,
sure.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
No, it's definitely a cool experience to sort of like learn how to eat differently and how that impacts your experiences and just how you feel.
I wonder if you could do carm now. I wonder if that's building.
I still have an irrational hatred of carm. I don't know what to tell you. I think it's something you just develop. Like you know how people just hate on stuff for no reason?
And then at a certain point it becomes more about the fact that you've been hating on it for so long.
And that you just have something to hate. Like I feel like that's why people like sports. Like they like someone to root for, but they also like hating on other teams irrationally,
that's a good point.
Right?
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of something that's built into us.
There is for better and mostly for worse, there is something very unifying about going, hey, screw those guys.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Or screw that thing. In this case, it's a dining hall.
It's true. And yeah, I had like my roommates and my friends at Metcalf also hated on Carm, so it was definitely a unifying factor. You know, we'd all just go to DeWick, and that would be the place to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's a heck of a way to bond, you know?
Yeah. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. I've been coming around to Carm, honestly, since the shift, it feels healthier.
I
leave DeWick feeling lethargic and feeling like I have had a very American meal.
What's Carm's dessert game like? Because DeWick
is so weak.
Always brings
it's
dessert.
So weak.
Yeah. Okay, that makes
it's
sense.
It's so bad. I gluten-free cookies, like oat milk soft serve, and very few options is the issue there. Yeah. So I guess continuing on with the college experience, what do you study and why is it interesting to you?
Yeah, so I study a number of different things. I'm actually a double major, so I'm a quantitative economics and political science major, and I'm also a minor in computer science.
That is so many things. That's a lot.
It's a lot, which is interesting. But like the reason I took it all on is because when I came into college, I just really wanted to learn, and I'm someone who is very varied in their interests. I don't like just like honing in on one thing, which is not so much as helping me now that I'm graduating. I think people who really focus in on one thing and like develop their skills in that and like really focus on maybe career options in that have it a lot easier in terms of like getting out of school. But I think it was still worth it because I sort of wanted my college experience to be very varied and very focused on, you know, a multitude of factors. And I mean, that's kind of why you come to a liberal arts school like Tufts too. So.
Mm-hmm. Did you pick them each up along the way? Did you come in knowing that these were the things you wanted to do?
Yeah, so I came in interested in economics. And so I started taking economics courses here at Tufts and was like, okay, I'm going to do this. This will be my thing. And like I was really interested in economics because I was interested in how society sort of allocates resources and stuff. I sort of see economics as a way to study that from an empirical standpoint. But then I wanted to really get more qualitatively into it and think about theory a little bit more. So I took a political science class, and I was really interested by it. It was a comparative politics class, just an intro class, and it was just really fascinating. So I started taking more political science classes here at Tufts, and the professors are really good in that department. Like, Tufts is pretty good at political science, and so I just started taking more and more and more and ended up just like, okay, I have enough. Let me finish out the major. And similar for computer science, I took a computer science class because I have a lot of friends from home who were really interested in that. Yeah. And they told me, like, yeah, I think you'd be good at this. I think you'd like this. And so I was like, yeah, let me try it. And I really liked it. I actually wish I did a major in comp sci. I just didn't have enough time by that point.
Yeah.
My first class was like my sophomore spring or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I picked that up as a minor. And yeah, I've just been really interested in the computer science and the political science. I really like economics as a concept.
Yeah.
I just haven't been super excited about a lot of the economics classes at Tufts. I think economics is taught very poorly at a lot of schools. So
That's awesome. Yeah. I had a question. It totally escaped me. So I might just jump to something else. Came back. I've got a sweet mate who did the same thing of just like took a couple of classes in the poli sci realm and then realized that it was kind of like easy to just finish out the major.
Yeah.
He was looking at a minor and then he was like, I can just fit in a major.
I was debating between like doing a poli sci minor and a comp sci major or vice versa. And I ended up doing the poli sci because not only did I just want to take more classes on
it's really flexible, right?
Yeah, it's a lot quicker, I would say. Like, it requires like less restrictions in terms of what classes you have to take. It's just like you need to take a couple classes in each of these categories, so you can sort of just like expand on your interests a lot in it.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so, like, I guess on that note, another question that you didn't put on here, but I might, like, if you had to do a semester of taking things that you've never taken before, do you have any idea of what that would look like? Or do you have any, I guess, more comp sci, right?
Yeah.
But what would you still want to explore?
Yeah, so I was thinking about psych for a little while.
Yeah.
Because I took intro to psych, and then I took a social psychology class, which was really, really interesting. It was one of my favorite classes here. And so I like a bunch of different things. So I was looking into like a psych major at one point, like a cognitive and brain sciences, which is like a subdivision of psych. It's like a It's an interdisciplinary major between psych, philosophy, and...
Like bio, right, and, or something?
Computer science, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, interesting. So I was like thinking, oh, maybe I'll do a psych minor, you know, when I was a freshman or sophomore. The psych department doesn't offer a minor, so I was yeah, it's just a major, so it's like, okay, that would be a big commitment. But I would probably want to, like, yeah, think about psych more. I think philosophy is really fascinating.
Yeah.
We have a friend.
We do.
Named Ben, who I think was actually on this show, Luke was telling me, who is a psych, or rather a philosophy major. And so, yeah, I mean, I feel like that would be really interesting to explore. It's a... There's a lot of different things going on there. I think it's also pretty interdisciplinary, so.
Totally.
Cool, yeah.
Awesome. How do you feel about jumping into a song?
Let's do it.
Awesome. Do you have any preference on what to play next, or do you want it to be dealer's choice?
It's all you, man. Your choice. Right.
We're going with another throwback.
Let's do it.
Can we pretend that airplanes in the night sky are like shooting stars? I could really use a wish right now, wish right now, wish right now. Can we pretend that airplanes in the night sky are like shooting stars? I could really use a wish right now, wish right now, wish right now.
Yeah, I could use a dream or a genie or a wish to go back to a place much simpler than this. Cause after all the partying and smashing and crashing, and all the glitz and the glam and the fashion, and all the pandemonium and all the madness, there comes a time where you fade to the blackness. And when you're staring at that phone in your lap, and you hoping but them people never call you back. But that's just how the story unfolds. You get another hand soon after you fold. And when your plans unravel in the sand, what would you wish for if you had one chance? So airplane, airplane, sorry I'm late, I'm on my way, so don't close that gate. If I don't make that, then I switch my flight, and I'll be right back at it by the end of the night.
Can we pretend that airplanes in the night sky like shooting stars? I can really use a wish right now, wish right now, wish right now. Can we pretend that airplanes in the night sky like shooting stars? I can really use a wish right now, wish right now, wish right now.
Somebody take me back to the days before this was a job, before I got paid, before it ever mattered what I had in my bank. Yeah, back when I was trying to get a tip at Subway, and back when I was rapping for the hell of it. But nowadays we rapping to stay relevant. I'm guessing that if we can make some wishes out of airplanes, then maybe, yo, maybe I'll go back to the days before the politics that we call the rap game, and back when ain't nobody listened to my mixtape, and back before I tried to cover up my slang. But this is whole decade of what's up, I've been great. So can I get a wish to end the politics and get back to the music that started this? So here I stand, and then again I say, I'm hoping we can make some wishes out of airplanes.
Can we pretend that airplanes in the night sky like shooting stars? I can really use a wish right now, wish right now, wish right now. Can we pretend that airplanes in the night sky like shooting stars? I can really use a wish right now, wish right now.
Hello, and we are back. We'll get to a PSA at some point.
Yeah, we'll get to one.
It out. I guess we were just talking about D&D, and so I'll maybe finish that off, and then I'll switch us into a question. But no, I've wanted to do a D&D show on air for a while because it's the entire game is just people rolling dice and then talking about how high the dice number was.
So there's no, like, board that indicates what's going on beyond the dice?
So there can be.
Okay.
Generally, when you get into, like, combat, so for anyone who's listening that's maybe not as familiar with D&D, D&D is Dungeons & Dragons. It's a role-playing game where you just kind of, like, make a character and then go through an imaginary world with some friends. And it can get a little more complicated than that sometimes, but that's the essence of the game. And so there's really only, like, a spatial visual element to it, where, like, people will bring out boards and stuff. if you're in combat, because that's when you need to like think about, am I close enough to the monster to hit it? Or, you know, do I have a line of sight on this guy if I'm trying to shoot him with a bow?
Okay.
Or something like that. But, and you can do that on a board with tokens, or you can do that all what's just called theater of the mind, which has to be a little bit simpler, but where you just explain it all and do it that way. But yeah, that's one thing that I do in my free time. That's a casual hobby I have. But one of the questions you have on here is, what's a casual hobby that you have?
So I had a different response to this, but with relation to the D&D, I wanted to talk about the game Diplomacy.
Oh, because definitely.
I played that with you, actually. Yep. And it's a really fun game. I don't get to play it that much anymore, but I did play it in high school a good bit.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, where you are a country pre-World War One,
one
of the big ones. So it was like Turkey, there's seven of them. Turkey, Austria, Italy, Britain, Russia, Germany, Italy. And you are basically trying to take over the world from the perspective of that country. And it's completely strategy based. So like there's no dice. Like, and maybe you've heard of the game Risk, which there is. It's totally kind of similar. You're trying to take over the world, but you have two dice.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, apparently D&D also has dice. Diplomacy is completely based on writing down what you want to do and then putting it in like a cup or something, and then everyone's orders, or what they call it, are revealed at the same time. So you have to base what you do completely based on what you think other people are going to do and how to respond to that. And so it does also require a lot of strategy, a lot of diplomacy, right? That's why it's called that.
There you go.
So yeah, that's a fun game. That's my impromptu answer to that question.
I really like that game. If it can happen this semester, I would love to play it again.
Yeah.
But it's got... It's just so cool to have the moment where everyone goes... A lot of board games are turn-based, where, like, I do my thing, and then you do your thing, and then he does his thing, and then she does her thing.
Yeah.
But it's just such a satisfying game structure of Diplomacy. You've got, like, a period of time where you're trying to convince someone to be your ally.
Yeah.
And then you write down what you want to do. And that person writes down what they want to do, and everyone does the same. And
it results in a lot of, like, backstabbing. Like,
there's so
it's
much.
It's so tough because you think someone's going to do something, and then they just do something completely different.
Because the whole time, everyone is acting in their own interest more than anything else, you know?
Exactly.
And, it's an incredible game.
Yeah. It's interesting when people act in their own interest versus other people, because a game like Diplomacy, if you play it with the same people every time, you also have to think about the repeated game theory aspect of it, which is like in game theory, if you're gonna do something once, it's in your best interest to backstab every time
as much as possible,
because either way you'll get out, you'll have more utility, right? You'll be better off. But if you have a repeated instance of it, then you're actually better off allying with people so you can both succeed. And so, like, Diplomacy, if you're playing with the same people every time, it sort of like begs the question of like which one you should do and how you should approach it differently based on the circumstance.
It's the whole prisoner's dilemma thing.
Exactly.
Of like, people solve the prisoner's dilemma if they know who they're doing with it, and they do it repeatedly. I had never thought about it that way before. I guess it had always been kind of like the looser, just like, I'm playing with friends, friend A is always going to be a jerk, and so I can count on that.
Yeah, but, exactly. And that's kind of based on repeated instances. Like, I know he's a jerk generally because I have experience with this person being a jerk in my past. So.
Totally. That's awesome. You said that was an answer that you thought of on the spot that question. Do you have other answers? I know you're a very talented man that does a lot of different things.
When people ask me for a hobby that I have, I usually like to tell them that I'm a magician.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, I'm a professional magician. When I say professional, I've done like a little bit of gigs on the side. I've performed at like a grad party.
He's got business cards.
Yeah, I do have business cards.
Yeah.
So I do like sleight of hand magic. I do stage magic. I do mentalism, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. As an observer who has really, I think, only seen a maximum of three of your tricks, but I can only think of two. They were both radically different.
Really?
And they were both like 10 times better than my single one, like, is this your card thing.
What did you see? Do you remember?
One of them was a mentalism type thing where you had a notes app on your phone with a whole bunch of different, like, I think celebrities.
Celebrities and grocery items.
It was food. And you were able to, like, correctly guess what people had in their mind previously.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure there's more nuance to the trick, both on your side and just in general.
All that matters is what you remember is the key here.
I remember being amazed and shocked. And
that's good.
How did you get into magic? When did that start?
So I was going into my freshman year of high school, and I was on vacation over that past summer, and it was like a river cruise type thing.
Okay, sure.
And there were like very few people my age on the boat or whatever.
That's the classic when you're young, you know, you're just at a dinner party and you're the only person that's 12 there. Yeah.
No, but there was one kid who was my age, and, and one of the adults tried to get us to be friends because we were like the only, you know, two younger kids there, or not younger kids, but kids there. Right. And so, you know, he put us in like the same, on the same table, and it was like super awkward because you're just like kind of like put two people together. Yep. We were like, didn't really know what to say, and we just kind of sat there silently for a little while. And then all of a sudden, this kid goes, "Hey, do you want to see a magic trick? Do you want to see a card trick?" And I'm like, "Yeah, okay, we can make this less awkward." And so he pulls out a deck of cards, and he does what I would think now is a very simple card trick.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was just absolutely mind blown. Right? I was like, "Holy crap! How did he just do that? That's incredible." And I was sort of hooked from there. I was sort of confused as to how someone was able to blow my mind and make me think that something that wasn't possible in reality could actually happen with just a deck of cards. And so I was like fiddling with cards all the way on the plane ride home. I got home, I started looking at YouTube and just like getting really obsessed with it. And I was terrible at first. But you know, I was doing like very basic stuff terribly, and my friends told me I was really bad at it and stuff. It was pretty rough, but I just stuck with it. And then I performed finally at some point, and I fooled someone, and just like seeing the moment where they were just completely confused and just they weren't in the moment. Or they were in the moment, right? They weren't thinking about reality or any of their problems, or they were just like absolutely dazzled at like this crazy thing that happened in front of them. I was really stuck with it because of that sort of experience you can provide people with. So now I don't really even obsess over the methods or the sleight of hand or you know, the way things are done. I'm really in it for the performance aspect and being able to provide sort of an interesting experience.
Yeah.
So
That definitely, I think, that love for the performance aspect of it came through when I've seen you do tricks. It's incredible.
Thank you.
And another question that's not necessarily on the sheet, but you've got a lot of talents and you've tried a lot of things. And what have you like learned, especially about starting something and sticking with it and learning? Like, is the most important thing just consistency, or
I mean, I've learned that it's really hard to start stuff.
Yeah,
that's the hardest part. I think anyone will tell you just to start anything, and I think the key is just consistency to a degree, but really consistency when it comes to the beginning, right? Being able to get past the hard part, because like consistency has to be like regimented at the beginning and disciplined at the beginning, but once you get past that part, you sort of develop the love for it if it's something you enjoy eventually, right? And so you, if you want to get involved in something, you should be really regimented and disciplined and consistent with just picking it up in the first place. And then at some point, if you really like the thing, then you won't have to treat it that way anymore. It can become something that you enjoy doing.
It's not a chore. It becomes a passion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, maybe other than riverboat cruises, to jump back to a question that's on here.
Yeah.
Where have you traveled? What did you do there? How did you like it?
So my favorite trip, I was, I went to a, so my mom, she's in this organization for physicians of Indian origin, And basically they do a bunch of, it's a big organization. They do a lot of like community work and stuff like that. But for their meetings, like for their, every year they have a big vacation essentially, and they go to like a really cool place and do like sort of some like meetings there and stuff like that. And so one year they went to, on like a really cool trip to Africa.
Yeah.
And so I got to go to a bunch of different places in Africa. And so I went to like Zimbabwe, Zambia, South Africa. I did like this incredible safari there.
That's
awesome. So we like stayed in like almost like in the middle of like the African jungle or whatever. Like, and we like had like this really cool like lodge there. And we'd go out every day for a safari and just drive and like see like, really cool animals. And after that, we went to Victoria Falls, which is between Zimbabwe and Zambia. It's one of the seven wonders of the world, I've been told. I don't know if that's true, but it's this really massive waterfall there. And I went bungee jumping off the waterfall, which was so cool. Yeah, and that was in high school. So
wow.
It was pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's insane. Dope. Did you have a favorite animal that you saw? Did you see anything unexpected while you were there?
I mean, I saw the main ones. I mean, the lions were super cool to see in person. Like, if you see a lion in real life, it looks very beautiful. Like, it's not like you just, it's not like you'd imagine. It's very, I don't know, it's very natural in your view of things.
Totally, yeah. Because, I mean, that's where it's meant to be, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty beautiful. It's pretty beautiful.
That's awesome. Let's see. Another travel question, a different kind of travel question.
Okay.
If you could time travel, would you rather travel forward in time or backward in time?
Yeah. So I would so I have a caveat. Does any of my travels affect the present when I come back?
Let's first answer as if they don't.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I would travel forward in time.
Okay.
Because it's kind of useless to travel backwards in time if you can't change anything. You're just going back and you're just like looking at things you've already done versus forward. Okay, this is like completely new and you can actually look like learn things that wouldn't affect the present but maybe satisfy your curiosity.
You've got the exact opposite answer that I was expecting.
Really?
Because I feel like what a lot of, or at least what I'm scared about based on the short stories that I've read and the movies that I've seen and stuff is like, if you go back in time and accidentally screw something up, then you've changed the future in a horrible way.
Right. But if it doesn't affect the present.
If it doesn't affect the present,
then it won't affect
then you get to be a tourist. Then you get to go to ancient Greece and just bum around in ancient Greece for a while.
Okay. So wait, can you go back in time and then just go anywhere you want, I'm assuming? Or are you stuck to your own experiences?
I guess that's the question of what I was assuming any period in time, any place on the globe.
Okay. Well, then future is still cool. It's like you could go see what the future is like
that's a
million
point.
Years from now. Like, are humans still alive? Like, what's going on? Like, is there a news type of society? Are we on Mars? Have we traveled light years away from the planet? I don't know. I feel like there's so many questions that you could...
Is there a biggest question? Like, what would be the reason to go? What would be the thing you were trying to figure out?
Well, I mean, if like...
Or just all of it.
If there's a way to figure out if God exists, I think that would be cool. Maybe the past would be useful for that. You could go back past the Big Bang and sort of see what existed.
Yeah.
Whoa. I don't know. But I feel like all that's super scary. Maybe I just want neither. Just like live my life.
I think that's the healthiest answer.
Yeah. It's like
just I'm doing good right now.
Right. I feel like at some point having these things would just like reduce satisfaction with your own life. Like you just feel so minuscule and like none of your own like challenges or desires would be meaningful anymore.
Let me know if this isn't the direction you want to go with it, but I mean, looking at the stars and thinking about how small we are, do you get that feeling as well? Or
I mean, I get that feeling to a certain extent, but it's nowhere near as much as actually being able to experience it. Like, I think we all have these abstract ideas in our head of how small we are, but I don't think none of us actually like understand that at a deeper scale.
I think that's a really reasonable point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really into this, internet personality, maybe, is the Hank Green.
Never heard of him.
Okay, well, he's the brother of the guy that wrote Fault in Our Stars.
Okay. And I haven't seen that, actually.
The two of them are authors, and they do a lot of, like, educational content on YouTube and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But they've got a lot of just, like, weird philosophical ramblings and things. And he recently had a video on how he's overwhelmed at both the fact that we are so small in this universe, and right now we are the only life that we know of in this universe. And, like, one of those is we're not very important because we're so small. And one of those is, like, we are the only organic beings here, and so we're very, very important.
Right.
And I've been thinking about that a lot recently, and so that's maybe why I tried to take it in that direction.
No, it's really interesting. Because it's like, I feel like most scientists think that there's life besides humanity, mm-hmm. but we just have been unable to find it. And then there's the paradox of, like, the people, like, if any society was more advanced than us, then they would be able to find us to a certain extent.
Why don't we see them?
Why haven't they found us? So that means that maybe there isn't life to, like, this amount of space away from us, X amount of space. Maybe they've done some calculations or whatever. And so it's like, okay, like, where's the life? Does it exist? There's, like, still all these questions.
Yeah. Do you believe there are aliens?
I would say so. I feel like it's there can't not be, right? With the universe being so expansive.
That's fair.
And, like, why? I mean, if you didn't believe in aliens, then you would have to think of some reason, like, why we exist. And, like, because
they don't.
It's like the whole idea of, like, we used to think the sun used to revolve around the earth, and the earth was the center of the world. And then we realized, okay, the earth revolves around the sun, and then there's so much more universe. We're not in the center of anything. And so, like,
yeah. Fair enough. Do you want to talk a little bit more about aliens? Do you want to jump into a song? What are you feeling right now?
I'm down for whatever you want to do, man.
Let's get a song in. I'll try and find a PSA that we like.
Let's do that.
And then come back on air.
Okay, sounds good.
Let's see.
Down in Tribeca, right next to the Narrow, but I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra, and since I made it here, I can make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cop in Harlem, all of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Pull me back to that McDonald's, took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry. Cruising down A Street, off-white Lexus, driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. Me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my ties, sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. I be spiked out, I could trip a referee, tell by my attitude that I most definitely from I made the Yankee hat more famous than a Yankee can. You should know I bleed blue, but I ain't a crypto. But I got a gang of walking with my click though. Welcome to the melting pot, corners where we selling Africa been by the home of the hip-hop. Yellow cap, gypsy cap, dollar cap, holla back. For foreigners, it ain't fair, they act like they forgot how to act. 8 million stories out there in the naked city. It's a pity half of y'all won't make it. Me, I got a plug special, and I got it made. If Jesus paying LeBron, I'm paying Dwayne Wade. 3 dice CeeLo, 3 card Marley. Labor Day parade, rest in peace, Bob Marley. Statue of Liberty, long live the World Trade. Long live the King, yo, I'm from the Empire State. That's is blinding. Girls need blinders or they could step out of bounds quick. The sidelines is lined with casualties who sip the life casually then gradually become worse. Don't fight the apple Eve, caught up in the in crowd. Now you're in style and the winter gets cold. In vogue with your skin out. City of sin, it's a pity on a whim. Good girls going bad, the city's filled with them. Mommy took a bus trip, now she got a bust out. Everybody ride her, just like a bus route. Hail Mary to the city, you're a virgin. And Jesus can't save you, life starts when the church in. Came here for school, graduated to the highlight. Ball players, rap stars, addicted to the limelight. Empty in May, got you feeling like a champion. The city never sleeps, better slip you an ambient.
And we're back. We wanted to go ahead with Bitcoin, yeah?
Yeah, let's do that one.
How's your week been?
My week has been just pretty good. I mean, I've been very busy. I'm on mock trial here at Tufts, yeah. And so we do a lot of prep, and our tournament is coming up next weekend, so we're just, like, constantly working. We have three scrimmages this weekend. So.
Ooh, good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
I got some numbers to think about in terms of Bitcoin energy costs. So, a single Bitcoin transaction consumes 2,131 kilowatt hours of energy, which is enough to power the average U.S. household for 73 days. Comparing its climate effects to other forms of electronic payment, a single Bitcoin transaction creates the carbon of 2,634,835 Visa transactions. A single Bitcoin transaction also generates 358 grams of electronic waste, which is equivalent to the weight of more than two iPhone 12s. These are some numbers to think about from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. A kilowatt hour, KWH, is the amount of energy a 1,000-watt appliance uses in 1 hour. All statistics are sourced from... A website that looks legit. I'm not gonna read a URL.
There's so many numbers in there.
There's so many numbers in there. The fact that it consumes the same amount of energy that the average U.S. household does in 73 days.
In a Bitcoin's worth, I think like 20k right now. So yeah. It's like 20k transacting $20,000 for 73 days of energy.
Yeah.
Pretty high.
So you had some numbers or like you were able to talk a little bit more about why this is.
Can you
go into that on air?
When it comes to cryptocurrency, there's you need to be able to validate the transactions.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason cryptocurrency is like super unique and interesting is because it's not centralized, right? So like if you go to a bank, right, someone's keeping a record of your transactions. So if I deposit $50,000, they're going to go to my account and they're going to say, okay, put $50,000 in his account according to my record. There's an intermediary, right? The person who runs the bank. But for crypto, that doesn't exist, right? So they need a way to validate the transactions. If I transfer you one Bitcoin, who's to say that who's going to keep track of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can just go to my log sheet and say, I get 1,000,000 Bitcoin and no one can question me, right?
Yeah.
So we need a way to centralize it while keeping it decentralized, which is the whole appeal. And so the way Bitcoin does it is that they use something called proof of work, where they have a really complicated like puzzle, I guess, right? Like code puzzle, right?
Yeah.
And they have people solve it, and essentially a bunch of people solve it, and the first person to solve it like gets a Bitcoin reward. And so that's what incentivizes people to use computational power to solve it.
Is this what mining is?
It's what mining is, yeah.
Gotcha.
And people are mining, they're using all this computational power to solve the puzzle, and that's the incentive because you get more Bitcoin. But what that's also simultaneously doing is it's keeping track of the balance sheet. And so everyone's trying to keep track of the balance sheet, and as long as everyone agrees on the same thing, or the majority of people agree on the same thing,
yeah,
then
it can keep its value.
They can keep the transactions appropriate. So that's why it's super computationally inefficient. But Ethereum has actually switched to a different model called proof of stake, where I forget exactly how it works, but it's no longer creating this super computationally efficient problem. And they sort of created a better way of everyone agreeing on exactly what the balance sheet looks like without having to use all the computational power.
That's super interesting.
Yeah, no, it's really super interesting. I mean, it's pretty promising because like, I think crypto is like, if you don't use all the computational power, super efficient in terms of, it's a lot more efficient than having all these centralized agencies having a control over everything, right? It sort of creates, like, for example, we have Uber, right? You have Uber, who's like a centralized agency that's connecting drivers to people who want to get places.
Yeah.
And so if we didn't have a middleman, you know, like, it would create so much more value in terms of like the driver could get paid more and the consumer could pay less, right? So
yeah,
if you were able to use blockchain, which is the same type of technology that Bitcoin is based on, this whole idea of using a decentralized network with a bunch of computers keeping track of the ledger, then you could eliminate, you know, middlemans like Uber, middlemans that, you know, sort of decrease efficiency. So I think if you, like, if this sort of technology develops further, I feel like it'd be a super interesting way to, you know, develop a bunch of other businesses and create a bunch more value.
And that's kind of at the intersection of a couple things you're studying, at least.
A little bit, yeah. It's a little bit. I read a book on it. It was cool. Something about blockchain. The blockchain truth or something. So I don't know. Yeah.
Nope. We got about 2 minutes left before we're going to start wrapping some stuff up. We got two questions left. Would you rather talk about something you've realized since coming to college, or whether you would want to be invisible while scat singing, or flying while yelling, or would you like to try and hit both?
I'm down for either. I feel like I think we could do the fun one because I think we've
been pretty serious.
Yeah,
we have.
Let's do the fun one.
So the question is: would you rather be able to fly but only while screaming at the top of your lungs, or be invisible but only while scat singing at a moderate volume?
Yeah, this one's tough because I think being invisible is
before you go any further.
Yeah,
I think every beat has answered this question when they've been on. I think every person.
Oh, really?
You're now the fourth person from this club.
That's exciting.
So no pressure.
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking. I think like being invisible would be better here in terms of you could just do it longer.
Yep.
Because you can't scream on your lungs at your top of your lungs for that long. So
true.
You would just like scream and like fly for a little bit and then probably have to take a break and then. So that's kind of a problem with the flying one, but in terms of being invisible, I think the only reason you would want to be invisible, correct me if I'm wrong, is to go under the radar and not be noticed. And so if you're scat singing, right, smooth jazz, everyone's gonna know you're there. Like, even if they don't know it's you, it's like, the scat singing guy is here, like, who's watching us? And so it's like, what is even the point of this if it's not even gonna be beneficial and you can't like sneak around? I mean, I guess you could, like...
So do you have an answer?
So my answer is the flying one. Because I think you could fly and, like, you could take a break, but then you could, like, still get benefits out of flying. You can still like, fly around. So I think that'd be cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do the other beats say?
Well,
am I on the right track here?
So... I think Francesca just wanted to know that she could scat sing for certain, and she can, and she's great at it, but she's like, if this guarantees my ability to scat sing, that's almost more important than anything else associated with this.
Okay, that's a classic answer from Vanelli.
I think, I forget specifically what Ben and Zoe said when they were on, but it being invisible actually has been the more popular answer of the two by a lot.
I can't agree with that. What do you think?
I just think it would be a really cool party trick, personally.
To go invisible? What about flying? You could just start screaming and you just go rocket in the air?
I think it would be funnier. Well, they're both kind of silly, aren't they?
They're both
silly. But I think it would be maybe less alarming is the invisibility, you know?
Definitely less alarming. Yeah, but here's the thing. If you use it as a party trick, you can't use it for anything else because then they would know. He's the guy who can go invisible when he scat sings. So anytime they hear scat singing, you're screwed. Like, you can't use it for anything.
So we've got to wrap up in a second, but I'm going to bring up something. I had a high school friend on the show once. And I'm going to bring up something he said, because I think it's an excellent point, is any time that you would need to be invisible in a socially acceptable way, it's okay to be scat singing. Because if you're trying to sneak into a concert, or if you're trying to get in most places, or a party or something like that, there will be so much noise that it'll cover you up.
I don't know.
Now, if you're trying to do something that you probably shouldn't do, then it'll probably be quiet around. And
I feel like there may be examples of socially acceptable situations to not have to be scat singing.
That's a good point.
Go ahead.
But that show I had two of my high school friends on, and the rebuttal was, if you're running for your life, it would be much better to have the flying one, because you'd probably be screaming anyway. But if you needed to hide, you couldn't hide, because you'd need to be making sound while invisible.
Yeah, home intruder, you can't do much about that one.
Other than freak them out.
Yeah. Dance circles around them while scat singing.
Yeah. I would be scared. We're going to go to a song in a second. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we close out the show?
No, this was really fun, man. Let's hear a song.
Awesome. Thank you for coming on. This has been Luke and Neil here on Elephant Loaf. You've been listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and I will be back 2 weeks from now with another guest. Here is Complicated by Avril Lavigne as soon as my laptop loads.
Great song.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Yeah, well, we're gonna... Oh, page unresponsive. Love to see it.
Oh, no.
So, this could
Should
be...
Should we fill some space right now?
Let's fill some space right now.
Okay.
What's your favorite color?
My favorite color is red.
Oh, yeah? Do you have a specific shade of red? It's always been red.
It's always been red.
Whoa.
Yeah, from back in the day, from early in my middle school career, even back to elementary school. Everyone always liked blue. And I just
couldn't
get behind the
hype. You've got to be the contrarian.
I couldn't get behind the hype of blue.
Mm-hmm.
Red's just one of those colors. It's a primary color.
Yep.
It stands out. It's not super boring. It's not like...
It is complex, though.
It's very complex.
You could almost say that it's complicated.
It's all been done before, and if you could only let it be, you would see. I like you the way you are when we're driving in your car, and you're talking to me one-on-one, but you become someone.